And the next instalment in our series, Duddington Discussions, Anna Howard speaks to Norman Stone and Fred Dealey in The King's Arms.
And I'm joined by Norman Stone, who is editor of the local Duddington News magazine, plus a local historian, and by the oldest gentleman in the village, Fred Dealey, who tells me he's 91 years old next month. If I can start with you, Norman Stone, Duddington can actually boast not just a new bypass, but one of perhaps the oldest bypasses, certainly in the county.
Before we start, can I just say I'm no longer editor of Duddington News. That's now been done by somebody else. Yes, in fact, we do have the oldest bypass in England. It was began to be built in the beginning of the 11th century, was finished by the 13th century, although for a long time after that, the main road was still through the village, no doubt because of the nine pubs. And it was only, in fact, I think, in the 19th century that the main road to Oxford became, in fact, the busy thoroughfare. And, of course, that all changed again when the M40 came. Now there's heavy traffic through the marketplace, right past my house on the very corner.
So you know all about that. But isn't it quieter now that the M40 has been extended?
Much quieter, yes, much quieter indeed. I think in that sense we have gained a great deal.
Now, Duddington also boasts a castle, one that there isn't much left of, I understand.
It's the only invisible castle in the country, I think. Again, that was built, in fact, originally, probably at the end of the 11th century. And it was pulled down again in the 1500s. And in between times, it was, yes, indeed, a castle with a big bailey and earthworks outside that, barns inside it. And today, many of the houses in Duddington have bits of the masonry from that castle still in their walls. In fact, in one of the farmhouses, they discovered a few years back three complete Norman arches under the plaster that they think must have come from that castle.
And that sounds like work that you might have discovered as a result of being part of the Architectural and Archaeological Society that Duddington once had, and I understand is no longer around. You're trying to get it revived.
Well, that's right. It was set up, in fact, a few years back, and I think most of the people who were founder members, I was one, have either died or gone away. But I do think it was an important sort of centre of local interest and activity and pride, in fact, in Duddington. Now that the new deacon has arrived, I understand he's a historian, so perhaps with his help we can restart the whole society again.
Do you think Duddington has a lot to be proud of in terms of its history?
I think so. One of the problems is that some of the history has great gaps in it. For instance, there was a settlement here in about 600 AD, set by a man called Deda. Duddington, in fact, means Deda's place or the village of Deda's people. And that must have been about 6th century. Then nothing at all until Doomsday, when it's next mentioned in 1086. Then there are further gaps. There are little bursts of activity where you get whole records in the 17th century, but the whole gaps even now where nothing really is known.
But there was a time when Duddington, it sort of teetered on the edge of being a town and a village for quite a lot of its life. Why is that? Why can it not sort of quite make the leap into being a town?
Some would say it is a town still because we have a town hall and a town football club. But no, I think the main problem was that the railway didn't come here. And that really made the difference between Duddington being the second town in Oxfordshire and being just a very nice large village.
But it did have quite a lot of local industry, didn't it, once? I mean, clock-making, wasn't that something? And glove-making is something that I know several of the villages in Oxfordshire did.
Yes, we made clocks and gloves, and we also made axles. In fact, many of the state coaches in Europe have axles made in Duddington. We made beaver hats, but not bowler hats, although Mr. Bowler did live here for a time. So yes, we had a variety of things going on in the village over the years.
Well, can I turn now to Fred Dealey, who is the oldest gentleman in the village?
Oh, I don't know the oldest one. Oldest man, I think, what was born here.
You were born here?
Yeah.
91, nearly 91 years ago.
That's it.
So
yes.
What do you remember of Duddington from your childhood?
Oh, I remember this used to be Duddington Pudding Pie Fair. And there used to be three rings in the wall just round the corner and two on the side of the road, and they were all Dane Barrow. You'll see a ring across the road.
And what was this pudding and pie fair?
Pudding pie fair, and I remember I see one once. It was a pie across about a foot wide, and a pastry red and like a Christmas pudding on a point in the middle. And the only lady who had the recipe, she lived next to the Tun public house there in New Street, and they were bakers, and the recipe died with her.
And in fact, the pudding and pie fair doesn't take place anymore. It became a fun fair in late November, I think. Is that right?
That's it. And then old Mr. Coggins lived over here, East Leicester. And when the horses, they used to come up from Wales, they say, some of the dealers, and you see them trying to argue in there, and you see them running the horse up and down here, and when they come back, they have a little chat, and then they'll slap hands. That was the deal.
That was the deal done?
That was a deal.
Horse sold?
Horse sold, yes. And Well, that was their pudding pie fair.
That was well, Norman, if I can just bring you back at that point, because isn't there some idea that the origin of one of the Bradycock Horse of Banbury Cross comes from this pudding and pie fair, trade fair, that used to take place here?
That's what I was told by somebody nearly as old as Fred, who's now dead or less. Excuse me. He said that because Deddington is on a hill, every way into the town is up a hill. And that meant that some of the horses from Banbury couldn't pull their carts up the hill. So they sent a horse out from Deddington, a special rig on it, which was stood up like a cock. And that came down to the cart, and you then hooked up the cock horse to the cart, and the cock, you rode the cock horse back up into the village. That's what they say. And it sounds very convincing to me, I must say.
There's something else that Deddington is the origin for, apparently, in the phrase.
A different old inhabitant, alas, again dead, told me that in the 17th century he thinks the phrase "the best man" first occurred in Deddington. What happened was this. In the marketplace there was a quintain, that's a kind of a pivoted beam which you used to charge at with your lance and try and avoid being banged on the back of the head as it swung round. The man who did that and broke the board with his lance became the best man, and he had the honour of escorting the bride that night. Not the wedding night, but that night.
So that's the origin of that too?
So they say.
It's always wonderful to have these. You can never quite prove or disprove them, can you?
Deddington should be bigger than Banbury, you see. When they come up with that new railway, they was coming up to Deddington. And they said, no, they got to come up here. They said, no, it'd be cheaper to go to Banbury, and that's where... So we might have been a bit bigger than Banbury.
But you have quite some memories from your childhood with this great hill that Deddington sits on top of. It created quite a few problems for you, didn't it, as a young man?
Yeah, I used to go when I went to school, that was. Of course, there's no cars about then. And, of course, my dad and his brother, they got a coal business, and my dad was a carrier to Banbury, Monday, Thursday and Saturday. And old Grant Dealey, he used to go out with my dad and his two brothers, and they used to start at what they could fly over and fill the ruts in with shovels. No cars about then. No cars about. They used to go and fill the ruts in. And I remember the first bit of tarmac labour, I used to go to Banbury Saturday afternoon, that was my holiday. And I used to take some washing from a lady at Deddington to a place called Lamb's Crescent in Banbury. And that was Tuppence Carriage. That was my pocket money. And I used to go by the Bodicott Flower and work to Deddington one day. And the next one, I went to Sturgis Castle and worked this way.
Now, what would you have done in the times when there was great winters? I mean, there were some stiff winters. And was Deddington ever cut off in the snow with this great hill?
I think I went to school in May 1917, and all the wars were then, and we had a job to get to school. And my cousin Hubert, he's a wonderful sportsman, boxer and everything. But he put his age on. That's when the first war was. And he was only in France for a fortnight. He got killed. Yeah, he was my hero. Yeah.
You're quite a sportsman as well, weren't you?
Well, I always enjoy sport, man. But of course, there was no cars about then. But I used to laugh sometimes. Now and then, you hear an old car come by, and your dad, and you look around and you swear at him. And when he come by, he said, "You want to get it off?" My dad did. If he see a fight, he'd go into it.
Fred is a pride and joy as a bowls player. You have to tell you about that, Fred Bowles.
Oh yes, well I know, because I was told that I wasn't allowed to keep him too long because you're going to play bowls this afternoon.
We're playing Banbury Borough, yeah, tonight. And always have a night out tonight.
How long have you been playing bowls, Fred?
Pardon?
How long have you been playing bowls?
Well, I used to do a lot of swimming down the River Swear, Clifton, that's a mile away. I used to be in four times a week and swim. And I used to swim in the deep hole, there'd be in several drain there. It's 30 feet deep, so the Clifton folks say. And I used to go down and take some soap and have a good wash. When I've been calling, my wife used to put all my underclothes in a little package, and I used to take a piece of soap and hide it and swim round the pool once and then have a good wash and then dive in again.
Well, we're going to find out a little bit later on more about some of the other activities that Deddington people get up to nowadays in 1994. Things have obviously changed since Fred Dealey was a young boy. But this is Village Voice, broadcasting from the King's Arms out here in Deddington.
And that's Anna Howard in our radio car. And as we'll be hearing in a moment or two, Deddington is a very musical village. And there's something about it, I think, that gets people to sort of get into a musical frame of mind. But before we find out about that, something that we recorded a few days ago, Jeff and Joan Todd, who are residents in Deddington, are the proud owners of a 21-note hand-turned Truman organ. Here's a piece that they recorded especially for us. It's called Piper in the Meadow. Thank you. That's a tune called Piper in the Meadow, and it was ground for us on the hand grind organ by two residents from Deddington, Jeff and Joan Todd. This is BBC Radio Oxford. It's coming up to 20 past two, 95.2 FM. I'm David Clargo, and on our radio car with today's edition of Village Voice, it's Anna Howard.
Very good afternoon. Welcome back to the King's Arms in Deddington. Yes, this community certainly is a musical, artistic and dramatic community. All sorts of things they get up to. There are 2,000 inhabitants here in the village of Deddington, so I guess they have quite a few people to choose from. I'm going to start now with Bill and Frieda Ivings, who actually play... We're going to let the secret out now. It's play the handbells.
Play the handbells, ring the tower bells.
Ring the tower bells. That's I get right. It wrong, didn't I? I was told off by a wife earlier today about calling the wrong thing.
That's right.
Now, you've been playing them for about how many years is it now?
Well, I've been playing handbells for just over 40 years, and church bells for just over 60 years.
So you're very involved with that.
Well, I have been, yes.
What is the appeal, what is the appeal from your point of view?
Well, it's devotion of duty as much as anything else. And then, again, it's a challenge. It's one of those sort of things, especially the tower bell ringing, that you've never sort of finished. You know, you can go on and go on. There are many different methods and so on and so forth. It's most interesting.
So do you think that even after 60 years, there's still room for improvement?
Oh, good Lord, yes. Oh, yes. I couldn't name half of the methods, let alone ring them.
Let me have a word with your wife, Frieda, because you haven't been playing for quite so long, and I imagine it was a case of if you can't beat them, join them.
Absolutely. It's the only thing we ever disagreed about when the children were small. He wasn't out every night of the week, every weekend, and I couldn't with two small children. So, but when they got married and he was complaining, I relented and I joined them.
That was 24 years ago.
That was 24 years ago, yes.
So you obviously got hooked.
Yes, but I'm not what you'd call a dedicated ringer. I do it duty for the church, but nothing else. I won't go anywhere else.
So it's your husband Bill who has the passion for bell ringing, isn't it?
Well, not now. It's worn off a little bit now. There are too many steps, you see.
Too many steps. How high is the tower, then?
Well, it's 46 steps to actually where we ring. But what I would like to do would be bring a ringing chamber down. But I can't foresee that. There's far too many more demands on the finances than warranting anything like that.
And how often does the community call upon you to practice or actually to play for them?
Well, we ring for every service. And we always have a practice on a Monday night, apart from bank holiday Mondays, and then we don't ring then. But it's every Sunday morning. It used to be every Sunday night as well, but we don't have evensong now. But every Monday night, as I say, apart from bank holiday Mondays.
And how many bell ringers have you got? Have you managed to recruit?
Well, we've got 10, maybe 11. she's got backache, her mate, you know, and finding an excuse, I think. But we've got 10 very good regular ringers. But, of course, the ideal thing would be to have 16. So in this day and age, I mean, people go out visiting, they have visitors, illness and this sort of thing. So if you've got two to cover for each bell, as it were, you see, then you've got no qualms having away.
That must mean, if my math is correct, you've got 8 bells.
You've got 8 bells, that's right.
I'm good or bad about that. And what about the different skills involved in, let me get it right, ringing the actual handbells and... ringing the tower bells.
Different altogether. There's no connection at all. Ringing tower bells, you have what you call a conductor, but he only calls the bobs and singles to alter the course of the methods. But apart from that, you have no music. Everything is memorised. It's like permutation of a football pulse, and it's juggled about with so many different methods and so on. You start at the beginning, and you've never found the end.
Just keep going, and you go for a long, long time. You have quarter peals, half peals, three-quarter peals?
Oh, yes. It's never ending, yes.
Well, if I can turn now to the Reverend Ken Reeves, who I know is quite new to the parish here in Deddington, aren't you?
Hello. Well, not so new now. I came 5 years ago.
A retired headmaster, of all things.
That's right. Yes, indeed. And also, I used to lecture at Goldsmiths College in London before that.
Now, I think I'm right in saying that when you first came to the parish here, the church had gone quite quiet and you've had to do quite a lot to revitalise it.
That's right. We have done quite a bit. There has been growth over the 5 years, and we've got a lot of things started that weren't here before. And I've been assisted by a very good team of lay people, and I'm very grateful and thank God for all the work that they do. Without their support and their help, it wouldn't have been possible to see the growth. One of the exciting things, I think, is, of course, our work amongst young people. We started a children's church, and I've just come back to be on your programme from our children's outing, which is at the Shire Horse Centre near Stratford-on-Avon, and there were 40 of us there. And then we're starting a club now for the 8 to 12 year olds, and we also have a youth fellowship which is beginning to grow, and a curate started a month ago, Dr. Newell, and he's taking charge of the youth fellowship, and I'm sure he'll develop a number of other initiatives in the parish as time goes on.
It sounds as if you're very keen to get a young congregation.
Yes, well, we're delighted to have the young people. Jesus said, you know, that young people should come to him, but it also means, of course, that we get the parents as well. And I'm delighted to think that over the 5 years, a number of parents of children in our children's church have actually been prepared for confirmation and gone on to be confirmed. So that's very exciting.
And can I ask you what you think about the bell ringers? We're going to hear a little bit of their work in a moment.
Oh, they're marvellous, and they do so much for the church. We're greatly indebted to Bill and Frieda and to all the other ringers. And, of course, we have a good choir as well. We have a choir in the church of about 25, and we've just got a new choir director and organist, Linda Bloxham, and she's beginning to draw in some recruits for the choir, just as Bill is always looking for recruits for the bell ringers.
Well, let's let you have a go now at the bell ringing. You've been setting it up behind me. If you'd like to take up your post, I know there's another young lady, Myra, who's going to be playing, and if we can just bear with you, we'll... I don't know what you're going to be playing, but I'm going to have to get up and move, I think, and move a little bit closer so we can hear you. Is there anything, Bill, that you're playing in particular?
Yeah, it's the old 100.
The old 100?
Yes, and we should play it through twice.
Play it through twice, so we'll okay. Through twice, and then we're going to go back and talk to about the Deddington players. But first of all, we've got 8 rather beautiful bells here, which I think were tuned about 7 or 8 years ago, so there shouldn't be have any problems with that. And they're just lining up.
We're ringing on 12 bells.
12 bells.
Three of us, four bells each.
4 bells each. Grief. Okay. Well, when you're ready, we'd like to start. That was absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much. I don't quite know how you managed to do 8 bells all at once, but it's fantastic. 4 bells in each hand. I'm going to go back now and talk to Jim and Jean Flux, because you are another aspect of active village community life here, the Deddington players. And Jim, if I can start with you, you were initiated by the church as well, I understand.
Well, we first started doing small pieces in the church one Christmas and got a group together, which was made up of people who had been in a previous Deddington drama group, but it had lapsed. So we decided, once we did the Christmas piece, that we would keep it going. And since then, we've done basically 2 shows each year, one in the middle of the year and one at Christmas. And for the last 3 years, we've done a pantomime, which has been written by Jean, my wife, and another lady in the community, Molly.
So, Jean, what is the pantomime for this year?
Oh, I don't think I can tell you that. That would be spoiling it.
Go on, let us into a secret. Well, you can let us know that your husband always plays the dame. He's told me that.
It's going to be our very own version of Cinderella.
So you're writing this at the moment, are you?
Yes, it's in progress, shall we say.
And now, where do you put the pantomimes on?
In the village community centre, in the hall there.
Which is the Windmill Centre, is that
right? That's right,
yes. Now, that Jim, is something... You're chair of the Windmill Centre as well?
Yes, I recently became chairman, and we're trying to encourage as many people in the village to use it. We are trying to expand the number of people who come and make use of a marvellous facility, which we now have. The council has spent something over £300,000 in upgrading that area. We now have a bowling rink, we have a an all-weather court, cricket pitch, 3 tennis courts, and of course the main building where Babington has played, and a lot of club activities go on.
Do you stage any of your productions there?
Yes, we do the pantomime there. And we're hoping in the future that we'll be able to bring some outside groups in, because as Deddington players, over the last couple of years, we've brought other groups into the area, musical groups, and to entertain people in the village.
How many people are we talking about who actually make up the Deddington players, do you?
I think we actually have a total of something like 40 on our books. But being a village group, we are very flexible. And just recently, we put on a production of Every Man in the Village Church. It was a Deddington Players initiative to raise money for church funds, which are in the usual chronic state of church funds. And I did have to go outside the village to cast that. One or two parts I couldn't fill in the village.
Because of the size of the production that was?
Yes, I mean, it isn't. We are a very small group, and of course in any drama group you don't have a group that consists entirely of actors. You have to have people who can paint scenery, make costumes, run lights, and so on and so forth.
But by and large, most of the community here managed to fill all those needs in terms of our dramatic...
Yeah, with Every Man, in fact. It wasn't only the production of Every Man with the actual actors. We had set it in a medieval fair within the church, so we had itinerant musicians and itinerant tinkers, we had people making lace, we had a printing press and all these things, so it included a lot more people in the village, and I would suggest for that one we were up near 60 or 70 people involved with that particular production.
And what about the turnout to see your production?
Well, there were about 350 people who came along. Each one who came into the church had to buy a nosegay, because we were saying we're in medieval times, so we charged 50p for entrance to buy their nosegay so that they had something to ward off the plague. But it was a very successful afternoon, raised over £600 for the church.
I should think, if I can come back to Reverend Kenry's, raising money for church is a problem, I think, for every village.
Oh, it is indeed, yes. We've had to find money here, you know, for the maintenance and upkeep of the building, as well as the enormous increase in our parish share to pay for the ministry of the church, and, you know, also our running expenses in the church itself. It's always a battle to raise the necessary funds, but we do get good support from the village, particularly in any appeal concerned with the church building. They respond very readily to that, and we're very grateful to them, because without the help of the village, you know, the congregation itself could never meet those bills.
And that's all we have from the King's Arms. There'll be more next time on Deddington Discussions.